And we came down with three main values of the conference in disaffiliation. And it's ingrained in my head. I don't know that I'll ever forget those three. But the first one was that they wanted it to be non-punitive, that they wanted it to be fair and not a punishment to anybody. The second one was they didn't want the conference to hold the bag of other people's fiscal responsibilities. And then the third one is they wanted it to be a quick divorce.
Let me welcome you to Mindful Leader. It's a podcast about leadership. This is Dennis Shaw. I'm a retired elder in the Mountain Sky Conference. And this is my original podcast went back to 2012 when I was using it for my sermons when I was at Hilltop United Methodist Church in Sandy, Utah. I've repurposed it in the last 2 months or so. One of my versions out there is called Version Zero, Episode Zero, excuse me, and it lays out sort of what I'm trying to accomplish. But we want to talk a little bit about leadership and how to be a mindful leader. I'm going to start talking mostly, or early episodes are going to be with people that I know in the Mountain Sky Conference, United Methodist Church. And I'm going to talk in an area having to do with responsible stewardship, which is the budget of the Mountain Sky Conference, how we are managing various elements of what we call the trustees. That has to do a lot with property, but also has to do with other elements of our responsible stewardship area. And a third area, of course, is benefits and pension for clergy. My guest today is the Reverend Al Strauss, and he is the senior pastor at Greeley First United Methodist Church. Just like my guest of 2 weeks ago, Bruce Berger, with a Nebraska background, Al also has a Nebraska background, Big Red, although he grew up in Westminster, Colorado. His father was an architect, something we have in common. My father was an architect. My daughter is an architect. And that's so, and I think it's an important, noble task. Al is a graduate of Hastings College in Hastings, Nebraska, where he majored in religious studies and English literature. Congratulations, Al. I like that, English literature. He has a master's in divinity from Isle of School of Theology in 2002, and he's been a minister of some flavor since 2002. Before that, he was employed as a counselor at a juvenile sex offender location. He also has worked quality control at a cheese factory. I want to say somewhere along the line, I've heard him talk wax eloquently about that particular topic, although I can't place it in context of exactly where it was. But he's also been a pastor since 2002. The joys of his life are his wife, Sharon, his three adult children. Al, where Sharon is at Pleasant Valley, Pleasant View. Help me out.
No, she did serve at Pleasant Valley. She now serves Fort Morgan and Brush.
Fort Morgan and Brush. I think I knew that somewhere along the line. And his three adult children. It's amazing what we have in common. He enjoys working out. I enjoy working out. He enjoys gardening. I enjoy gardening. Takes a great deal of pride and joy in his wife and children. I take a great deal of joy in my wife and children. And he commented he has a vinyl collection. And I've pruned my vinyl collection down from about 400 to about 200 the other in about the last 3 years ago, 4 years ago. But I've got a pretty substantial collection of vinyl records that I still go and listen to. So without further ado, welcome to Mindful Leader, Al. And thank you very much for having said yes to being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's an opportunity to get the word of trustees out to the conference.
And that is part of our goal. For those of you that listened to the first two or three, I had a little bit of a one way of approaching that. And I'm going to allow Al to expand a little bit about his tasks and duties and things like that within the context of questions. But I want to start with trustees, if I can. And it seemed like between Angela Thomas, the first week that we talked, and then Jeff Rainwater last week when he talked, there was a bit of a common element with the two of them. Angela talked about is the undone work and about how there was this subtext going on in the background of things that needed to be that were hard for her to understand necessarily, but it was just the undone work. And then Jeff talked a little bit about trust, about building trust. You have the most experience as helping with the conference as a volunteer in the area of trustees. Talk a little bit to me about the issue of trust and lack of trust, or what is going on in that particular area.
Trust is definitely an issue that we have on the forefront on trustees and on responsible stewardship. Of trust for trustees that I often see is on our property and liability insurance. We had a motion or a petition come forward asking for a task force to be created and search out all the different opportunities that we could get cheaper property insurance. The people in the conference didn't feel that we were doing our due diligence in that. So we put that task force together. They met for probably 6 months, once a month, looking at all kinds of different options, including self-insured. And it came back that there was no viable option that was cheaper than what we were doing. For the trust part of for the trustees is we've got to find a way to like get that word out to people, you know, that we've had this searched and we've had our work looked at and it came back that we did good work. One of the big struggles in the conference that I feel on trust is it's a us versus them mentality in a lot of different areas. And as trustees, I believe it's our goal and our purpose is to start breaking down those barriers and letting people see exactly the work that we're doing and why we're making the decisions we make so that they can find a little bit more interest in us.
And it seems like over and over again in all the conversations we have, the issue of communication. You didn't say communication, but you said getting the story out. How might you go about improving that, getting the story out, getting the communication out so that people have a chance to understand better what is going on?
You know, that's something that we're talking about. I've just become the chair of responsible stewardship just last month. And with annual conference coming up, we have meetings in July to move forward. So we haven't really done much since my time of chair there. But we've talked about the webinars that we do and that they're excellent work, but they're an hour long. And oftentimes our church members want a quick answer. And yeah. I don't know how effective a library of the webinars are. And also, once you start to develop a library of webinars, people don't realize that what webinars are out there, and so yeah. And they don't go look. One of the things I think trustees did well with disaffiliation was the issue of unfunded retirement obligations. You know, that would be the pensions and then the health benefits of retirees, which is by far the most expensive part of the disaffiliation process. They made me do probably 15 takes on a video, keep getting it shorter and shorter to explain the unfunded retirement. And then we put it out on Facebook that I think it was, I can't remember. I think it was maybe a four minute little
I recall
video.
It.
Yeah. And that seemed to answer that people's questions. I don't think that they are looking for a big hour long explanation on things. We have to just figure out what's good TV and remember that people have about a 3 minute ability to listen on TV.
Would you like to explain to us a little bit about what responsible stewardship and what's unique about it within Mountain Sky?
But it's a representative for the Mountain Sky Conference. It's a representative from the cabinet, from the trustees, from the Finance Committee, the Archives Committee, and the Pension. And how it's been used in the past is like to set up the webinars and try to communicate to the conference the things that the administration of the church is doing. I believe that we'll be moving to different goals and visions on what would be helpful as those five in the future.
And you are now the new chair of that.
Yes.
And what so I've been regularly asking people sort of history kinds of questions. Here in your context, I'm not so much asking a history question as much as I'm asking of a question of more along the lines of where do you think you might be trying to help carry this, help lead this over the next 3 to 5 years? Do you have some goals that you've thought about and you want to work it through?
Our first meeting, I had an opportunity to have four staff members on that meeting with responsible stewardship, and just to kind of hear what working for the conference is like as we oversee the administration of the conference. And one of the things that I've heard over and over again is at least once a month, a staff member is crying and has to be talked down from quitting their job. And I was like, what is that? That's toxic. And so, and then the other thing that I also heard was there's an us versus them mentality. And I asked more questions about that. And it seems like there's a cabinet versus everyone mentality, staff versus everyone's mentality, a clergy versus everyone's mentality, and then church members versus everyone's mentality. And oftentimes the interactions between them can become volatile. So I hope as a board of stewards we are able to tame that to some extent. But I'll be honest, I was on board of stewards like 20 years ago, and that mentality was still going on back then. So I mean, to set that goal, it's lofty, but I believe I've been doing some research on how to break toxic culture. One of the main things that I hear is you have to name it. I don't know if I get a platform at annual conference as the chair of responsible stewardship, but I am prepared to say one that we do have a toxic environment, and that we need to work on that and challenge people to do better on that. We need to be consistent in keeping that in the forefront, that setting a goal of caring for one another and loving each other is more important than the outcomes. And then also with the staff, though, we need to become more nimble and flexible in identifying what people need and providing it for them, rather than oftentimes giving them what we think they need.
I'm with you on, I mean, besides gardening and architecture and working out and being proud of my adult children and my wife, I'm with you on the issue of naming the issues. The issues so around the us versus them has for a lot of different elements to it. Sometimes it's urban versus rural. Sometimes it's Colorado versus everybody else. Sometimes it's I-25 versus whatever. And I think the geographical expanse here leads to some of the us versus them kinds of things that you were talking about. And it manifests itself. Trust and distrust. I guess I want to go there because I think that's a leadership element, and both on the responsible stewardship side, which conducts some overwatch over essentially resource-oriented kinds of things, money and property, but also in the area of trustees, which is primarily property and how we protect it in the scheme of things. How are you going to look at that, look at what's going on, and try to measure your progress and how it is that you go about building trust and how it is that you help minimize or bring down distrust? How are you going to go about doing that?
Well, I think I learned a lot about that with the beginning of disaffiliation that I was assigned the chair of the task force to lay out the disaffiliation process. So if you're really unhappy with that, you can call me and let me know. many people already have.
And you've posted on Facebook that you were open to a dialogue on that. I've seen that reply.
Yes. One of the things that I learned on that is the very first meeting we had, one of my friends and colleagues was on that with me, is Jeremy Scott. He kept saying, what is the conference values? What are the conference values on disaffiliation? And I kept saying, well, let's ask the cabinet. And he goes, I didn't ask the cabinet's values. I want the conference values. And so we laid out a plan of asking people what are their main values around disaffiliation that included asking the cabinet. We asked circuits, different committees and task forces, roundtables, just try to reach out to as many people as we could. And we came down with three main values of the conference in disaffiliation. And it's ingrained in my head. I don't know that I'll ever forget those three. But the first one was that they wanted it to be non-punitive, that they wanted it to be fair and not a punishment to anybody. The second one was they didn't want the conference to hold the bag of other people's fiscal responsibilities. And then the third one is they wanted it to be a quick divorce. And we had those values in the forefront of every decision that we were making and every process that we made. And it was disaffiliation. I mean, it's a divorce. Yeah. And so I'm not saying that everybody was happy and, you know, jubilant during the process, but it was clear. Our process was clear and concise, and people were able to may not be happy with the process, but they understood the process. And I believe that that develops trust. I think responsible stewardship has a lot of work to do around what is the values of the conference when it comes to the conference staff and its organization.
Ralph Waldo Emerson once made a remark, I'm going to paraphrase it, simplicity on the other side of complexity is a thing of beauty. But getting to simplicity without going through the complexity is worthless. It's worth nothing. And my guess is that to come up to those three values, those three sets of values, there was a lot of work associated with that. I noticed you stated it in context. It was, what are the values around disaffiliation? It wasn't what are the values of the conference, stop. It was, what are the values of the conference around disaffiliation? That was impressive the way you approached that. So
that was also another learning. the trustees have set up a new ministries endowment that, we didn't do the work around values. And so we set up this petition that set up the endowment where 50% goes to the endowment, 25% goes to CVC, or like the New Church Starts people, and then 25%.
Congregational Development, CDC.
Yeah, yes, and then other 25% goes to the trustees to do their work around buildings and maintenance. And it passed with a 98% approval rating. And so we thought we had hit that right out of the park. It wasn't even 1 year later that our very first church that closed put forward a petition challenging the use of the funds on a piece of sold property. And that passed with a 78% approval. And so clearly we didn't hear the values of the conference, and we have now been speaking to closed churches and churches that are struggling. And we realize that everybody's value is to build new church starts in the future, but they want to do it in their backyard where they closed. And so like this year, we're trying to meet those values as well by taking 5% out of the new church start budget, or out of the sale of the property to the new church budget, and then 5% out of the trustees that they're part of that, and give 10% to the district round tables to use for church turnaround for churches in their district where the sale of that church came from, to help fund new ministries within existing churches. And so we're trying to hear people's values and then be humble enough to turn course a little bit to allow people's values to be heard.
Well, I think one of the key elements of mindfulness is to respectfully listen. One of my favorite quotes that I've heard from various different sources, so I hate to attribute it to any one person, is sort of off of the theme of too often we listen in order to reply rather than to truly attempt to understand. And to me, part of leadership is what it sounds like to me, what you've been talking about, an element of here for 4 or 5 minutes has been the issue about listening in such a way that you can incorporate it into what you're doing. Another element of mindfulness is being willing to admit that maybe the direction you were going was not the right direction, and being willing to chart a new path, a different path as a result of what you think you heard.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the critical part about this. You know, disaffiliation, this is our at least our third round, maybe or fourth round of disaffiliation. It's like, you know, just you lose track of time. We were really blessed to have our first round of disaffiliation was one church.
Yeah.
And we learned a lot from the mistakes and the hurdles and the difficulties of disaffiliation with that one church. And then the next round, it was like two or three. And then then this year it's around 30. If we would have started with 30 churches, the opportunity to learn and to make corrections wouldn't have been there, and it probably wouldn't have been as smooth as it is.
So consequently, if somebody wants to tell a horror story about something and they start telling the horror story from hypothetically 2020, your comment would be, well, that may have been true. I apologize, but we think we learned some lessons from that, and we'll evaluate us where we are now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I guess one of my leadership styles is always, I don't mind that we make mistakes,
yeah,
but we need to correct them, you know, judge us, like, let us know what our mistake was, and then judge us in a year, and then tell me if you've been heard.
The last 3 weeks, I've been asking people a little bit of a question about the issue of what it is that we say, those of us that are regular volunteers at the conference, like you and me, and the staff who work at the conference often, about how hard it is sometimes to implement the idea of the fact that the conference is here to serve the local church. And so often it's very easy for us to get into a mindset of the fact that we may say that our goal is to have the conference serve the local church, but it's easy to get tripped up in that, and we get to a place where what we operate in is our viewpoint is that the local church is here to serve the conference. And it's subtle, and it happens almost without conversation. And people, when I hear it happening or see it happening, is that people don't even realize what they're saying. Have you seen any evidence of what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A lot of our conference work, to be honest, has no impact on the local church whatsoever. Yeah. And I believe that we need to do a better job of making it easy for local churches to answer the very simple question, what has the conference done for you? And more than send you a pastor, you know, to me, that's the bare minimum that the conference could do. For trustees, some of the things that we're looking at expanding on is helping churches with their annual walkthroughs and setting up goals on maintaining their buildings on limited funds and budgets so that they can start to set up a plan on taking care of oftentimes uncared for buildings. Looking at putting out no to small interest loans to churches to start up ministries or to carry them through while they're developing new to fixing their buildings to do new types of ministries. Right now we're looking at one church that's looking at trying to put affordable housing into their building, but they're going to have to shut down for a while, and they're already not making it with the way it is. And that affordable housing would give them enough money to be able to carry on and take care of the building property. So we're looking at giving them a no interest loan to carry them through until those low interest properties come through.
I'm going to tell a similar story on the race of the building. We had some wind damage in Sandy, Utah, back in 2016, 2017 or so. And between what the trustees were able to help us with and what Church Mutual did for us with it was essentially no cost. There was no cost with it. There was no deductible and some things like that. And I realize there's people out there that have a different story on different issues. I understand that, but I so the question as related to what has the conference done for me today in 2017 or so at Hilltop, it was the answer was saved us $55,000, which is real money.
That money was spent to lower premiums because trustees knew that we were given high or deductibles because we knew that hail and wind deductibles were ridiculously high, and we get money back every year from Church Mutual for when we meet goals on the lack of claims. And one of the best ways that we can do that is to fix our carpet and to mark stairs, and because trips and falls are the number one claim that the conference gets. When we reduce those, we get money back, and that money we use to reduce deductibles for churches that need it.
One of my favorite YouTube recordings is of David Foster Wallace doing this thing on This Is Water. It's a graduation speech from Kenyon College in 2005. And he describes these two fish that are swimming along, and they come past another fish, and the older fish says, "Hi boys, how's the water?" And then the two fish go on, and the one of the fish looks over the other fish and says, "What the heck's water?" I would say to you, sometimes the value of the conference is like this, what is water kind of question, is that it has become so much a part of what it is that we have and or do, we forget what it is that the conference has done for us. And you made the comment about pastors and bare minimum. I agree with you within limits, but the fact that you have a pastor in most cases in the conference is an investment of a lot of people over a long period of time. I mean, you and I were created by various people taking their time to help develop us and nurture us to hopefully be effective at where we are. The jury, the feedback I get from Greeley First is they're quite happy with Al Strauss. So.
Well, we try. And I take your point there, absolutely. I mean, I did say bare minimum,
It is a minimum. Yes.
but to get an effective pastor is a boom.
One of the questions that I have been asking, I call it my actor studio question. And on the actor studio, he asked 10 questions every single time the guests were on. I want to ask one. And it's related to what you knew and what you know now, what you knew one time and what you know now. And I guess I want to talk about sort of when you came on to trustees versus what you know now in the trustees. But and I think you're currently the vice chair of trustees, plus all your experience you had with the disaffiliation. So What did you wish that you had known when you first came on to the trustees that you now know? What is the one thing that you wish somebody had come down and tapped you on the shoulder and said, Al, you need to know this before you start?
Let's see, I came on trustees in 2019. So probably if somebody would have told me to buy stock in Zoom, that would have been nice. But seriously, I think what I wish I knew back then was how non-collaborative the conference structure was at the time, and how much weight was on the cabinet's shoulders to just kind of lead the church, or the staff shoulders to lead the conference, and many of our committees, and the trustees was one of them when I first got there, just kind of rubber stamped whatever work they had done, and they didn't carry that work with them. I've seen huge changes in the trustees and taking ownership of their work and pride in what they're doing. And I think we've taken the load off of cabinet and staff in many ways, but I wished I would have known that earlier on in that journey.
A version of that is similar to what Angela said the first week. Angela Thomas, the chief financial officer, indicated the first week was a version of that. She did not realize that we were not further along in the creation of this new thing called the Mountain Sky Conference. And it was fascinating to her how much was not grounded in any kind of prior history. Everything was sort of still in limbo. She made the comment, though, that she had a recent gathering of conference treasurers, conference CFOs recently, and there was conferences that emerged 10, 12, 14 years ago that are still experiencing a little bit of that. So she's hopeful that we'll get some of that down. The bishop, I hope she, I don't think she's ever said this to me in private. She feels that her comment has been, at various times I've heard her speak, is between General Conference 2019, no conference in 2020, no General Conference 2020, COVID itself, Boy Scout disability, Boy Scout bankruptcy. I'm sure I could throw some other things out there. That we have really, there has just been a series of these events that have happened, which has made the creation of this new thing called the Mountain Sky Conference that much harder. And going back to candor, our willingness to state that we need to get working on creating this new thing as what our policies and procedures, how we're going to do things, is shared. I think all 3 weeks, some element of that theme has been stated.
Yeah, I think I've listened to all three of your first episodes. Loved all your guests, but I think I have a different take on those. I think
Okay,
Bruce
please.
called it. I think Bruce called speed bumps.
Yeah.
Like, man, I have found, man, disaffiliation, COVID, Boy Scouts, bankruptcy and lawsuits, to be opportunities to see where we've got to go and to make new policies. Trustees has really circled around and figured out what they want to do and want to be. And every time we hit one of these, we have our mess ups and we have our hiccups with other groups, but then we figure out who we are and how we relate to them. And I feel like because of all those hurdles in the last 3 years, trustees is a stronger committee.
Yeah.
And a stronger unit because of it. And I'm not excited that all this happened, but I believe that we're blessed and charmed that we went through that.
I'm reminded on some of this. It may have been an example I used before. The Joseph story at the end of Genesis, where Joseph tells his brothers that what had happened with him being sold into bondage was meant for evil, but God had turned it to good. Not remotely suggesting that God gave us COVID or God gave us Boy Scout bankruptcy or that. But sometimes you can take these events that happen like that and you can use them to have to wield and create a dynamic change that needed to probably need to occur anyway. And we've done it has accelerated some of the things that needed to happen, the changes that need to occur.
Absolutely. And to bring it all full circle, we just had to name our mistakes or name our hurt when it happened. And nobody wants to hurt anybody, but oftentimes we don't name our hurt. And so nobody can fix that. And I found that the cabinet, finance, pension, all those places have been willing to work with us when we name our needs and our hurts.
Yeah, transparent. Going back to the issue of mindfulness, which is what I'm trying to do with this overall podcast, transparency is stated as one of the issues of, you know, be clear in what you're trying to do and what's going on. And I think when you're not transparent, it leads to a state of distrust. I've been asking, besides my actor studio question, I've also been asking people as I get towards the end, is there anything that I didn't ask that you sort of wish I had asked? It's sort of your chance to say, well, Dennis, I'd wish you'd ask me a question about then. And so I'll let you ask your own question. If you don't have one, that's fine. But your call.
Yeah, question I love to answer for people is, what would you have done differently in disaffiliation? And my answer is like I said, I even just learned what responsible stewardship was last year. We started putting together disaffiliation, you know, 4 years ago. And I was like, wait a second, there's a group that has pension, which is unfunded retirement obligations. We have finance that deals with arrearages and apportionments. You have trustees that deal with property issues, and you have archives that deals with historical records that is also part of disaffiliation and gathering those. And we're meeting. That would have been really helpful to use all of those resources to put together disaffiliation instead of trustees making decisions on how unfunded retirement obligations were to be paid. It would have been helpful to have a conversation with pensions on that. And so what I wished I did differently is I wished I would have used the responsible stewardship and continue to tear down the silo effects of the conference and work with the other committees that are in their wheelhouse of expertise.
Well, I mean, part of purpose of these conversations is to be able to articulate what needs to be done and articulate, sort of throw it out there so that people can hear what potentially needs to transpire. You are correct. My 8 years on Council of Finance Administration, the first time, and about 8 years, the second time, so I've got 16 years. Breaking down those silos is tough. That is tough, hard work. Part of it has to do with a perception of you want to spend my money without my knowledge. You know, you want me to say yes. And I think you and I have shared some conversations back forth about lay out for me your vision. Let me lay out for me your overall strategy of what you're trying to accomplish. And I want to get to yes, but I don't want to get to yes when I don't understand what it is we're trying to do in the big scheme of things.
Right.
Al, thank you very much. I really, really appreciate the candor which you came in here and talked with us about. I didn't, frankly, knowing Al the way I've known Al for 20 plus years, I didn't expect anything other than candor. But thank you very much, Al, and I appreciate you coming in to do this for us.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity.
My next guest will be the three co-lay leaders of the conference. That is Barry Welliver, Gayla Jo Slauson, and Nancy Flint. I'm going to talk to them on June the 9th. If you have a question that you'd like to have me ask them, I would ask you to send me an email note at Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, at then Mantuan, M-A-N-T-U-A-N .org. And there will be a blurb on that in the show notes as well. And I'd be glad to get that and share that with them as well. Again, Al, thank you very much for your time today. And I appreciate your candor as always. Peace be with you.
Blessings on you.
God bless.